Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
You are listening to Africa Link, and a very good morning to you and welcome to this edition on Monday, March 23rd. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. And coming up, West Africa marks 1 year since the first case of Ebola was officially diagnosed. Liberia has been making much progress lately fighting the disease. But as we hear from these Liberians, there is still much that needs to be done.
The fight is not over. And as such, we should continue to take heed to the advice from WHO, the World Health Organization, and our own Ministry of Health.
We should continue to take precaution, wash our hands, stop shaking hands.
Kenya plans to construct a wall on its border with Somalia. The government says this is meant to protect the country from terrorist attacks.
According to Mwenda Njoka, spokesman in Kenya's Interior Ministry, which is also in charge of the country's security, time to build the wall has come.
These stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes. Do stay tuned.
Top story.
Today marks 1 year since the first case of Ebola was diagnosed in West Africa. The virus has killed more than 10,000 people in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone, the three countries badly affected by the epidemic. Liberia, however, was on the countdown of being declared Ebola-free after recording no number of new infections in 15 days. But it suffered a major setback on Friday when a suspected case tested positive with the virus. Our correspondent in Monrovia, Julius Kanuba, has more.
Under a bright Sunday morning weather, a group of kids are playing soccer in Congo Town, a suburb of the Liberian capital Monrovia, and the kids are obviously happy to be back on the pitch again.
What makes you to be happy?
My Ebola go down.
Happy for me because Ebola go away. First Ebola was injured, everybody was laying down in hospital.
Some months ago, especially between March and December 2014, Liberia was engulfed by the Ebola crisis. It was a period clouded by death and fear. Moses Carter is one Liberian who has been living through the Ebola nightmare.
As we mark 1 year of observing this upsurge of the Ebola virus, it is a period that will never be forgotten in the history of our country. The fact that the Ebola virus recorded a lot of deaths, it has left an indelible, serious economic problem for our country.
Although Ebola has affected the economic and social fabrics of Liberia, 1 year on, the country has made significant progress in fighting the virus. Until late last week, Liberia went for over 21 days without a single case of Ebola since discharging its last known patient on March 5. Liberians were counting the days to meet the required 42-day incubation period for which the country would have been declared Ebola-free. But with this countdown now interrupted by one fresh case of the virus, the need for Liberians to remain vigilant in defeating the virus cannot be overemphasized, says Dr. Francis Carter, deputy head of the Liberia Ebola Incidence Management System.
My caution, and this has been something that we've talked about over and over, that this is not over until it is over. We need to continue to put into practice those preventive mechanisms that have taken us from where we were to where we are now.
The caution by Dr. Kate resonates among many Liberians.
The fight is not over, and as such, we should continue to take heed to the advice from WHO, the World Health Organization, and our own Ministry of Health. There is a need to continuously practice safety measures that were introduced during the heat of Ebola.
We should continue to take precaution, wash our hands, stop shaking hands.
It is hoped that with increased good hygienic practices and vigilance of Liberians, Ebola will be eradicated from the nation very soon.
Julius Kanuba with that report. Liberia was the hardest hit at the peak of the epidemic and has seen more than 4,000 deaths. But the country was at the advanced stage in its recovery from Ebola before the last case in the capital, Monrovia. My colleague Isaac Mugabe spoke to Maria Teresa Kachaputi, an emergency coordinator with the medical charity Doctors Without Borders.
We received this case on Friday afternoon, and she was admitted in Alwa 3, that is right now the Ebola management unit in Liberia, Monrovia. She was admitted. She's the first case, Ebola case, after more than 21 days. But to say that for everybody was extremely strong, a very bad day. But at some times we have to realize that anyway, despite the fact that we passed more than 21 days, it's still Liberia. It was a lot of things related to that. So the fact that the outbreak in the rest of the country is still ongoing, the new cases were expected. So right now we have to act with this situation. We have to be very rational, and we have to deal with this case. Again, this is a battle extremely difficult to win with Ebola, but it's one of the things that we have to do for the future. We have to improve the surveillance system, and we have to continue with the contact tracing, try to put everybody on the list and follow them medically, and be sure that the chain of transmission will be as soon as possible stopped to reduce the number of cases in Liberia.
Maria Teresa Kachaputi from the medical charity Doctors Without Borders, and apologies for that terrible phone line.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
On Sunday, the United Nations marked World Water Day. We head to Ghana, where access to clean drinking water is very low, in spite of official figures claiming gains in supplying communities with clean water. Isaac Kaleji in Accra has been looking into Ghana's water provisions and filed this report.
Clean and running water is available to 70% of Ghana's rural population and 65% of those living in cities. That is at least what official figures say. The country has met the target set out in the UN's Millennium Development Goals. But what remains a challenge is getting clean water to Ghana's sprawling urban population. While Ghana's President John Mahama admits there are challenges, he says that the government is addressing the problem.
We are behind in the urban areas because a lot more people are moving from the rural areas to the urban centers. Urban water is at about 65%. But we're looking at the places in urban water that are traditionally starved, and we're putting in water expansion projects to be able to bring in more water.
While some of the projects are already completed and others underway, even residents in splash residential areas of Accra, like Legon, experience difficulties with their water supply.
For the past few days, it's been very, very difficult actually having access to water. I have stored some water in my barrel, but since it had run out, I have to roam from place to place looking for water. So it's time-consuming.
Other areas like Tishi, close to the seat of government in Accra, have seen significant improvement in water coverage over the years. But whether Accra's water is actually drinkable is another question.
I don't drink that water. I have my choice of water that I drink. I'm scared of it. I don't want to take any risk. So I have never drank it. A lot of people use that place for their toilets, and then people throw rubbish there. So the rubbish goes into the sea.
In many areas, best pipelines lay in contaminated drains, which lead straight to people's home. For such communities, it is not just a matter of access to water, but having access to clean water that isn't contaminated. Ghana needs over $100 million to completely ensure that all Ghanaians have access to potable water. Civil society groups are demanding that the government puts more money into addressing the challenges and averting the yearly outbreaks of waterborne diseases. Benjamin Arthur is Executive Director of the Coalition of NGOs in Water and Sanitation.
From middle of June last year, with the Corolla cases, we had about 29,000 Corolla. And it is because we've not managed ourselves well in terms of water and sanitation. Families were stressed out, people have to spend money. But if you have put more money in providing water, making sure people have access to improved sanitation and they are using it well, we could have reduced the occurrence of such diseases.
Ghana's urban dwellers haven't given up yet, though, and expect the assurances of their leaders to be fulfilled to bring them some relief.
Isaac Kaleji. Kenya has a long and porous border with Somalia, with thousands of people crossing back and forth every day. But that could be over very soon. Now, the government has decided to build a wall to physically separate Kenya from Somalia in the hopes of shielding the country from attacks by militants from their eastern neighbor. Our correspondent James Shimayula has the details.
You know, according to Mwenda Njoka, spokesman in Kenya's Interior Ministry, which is also in charge of the country's security, time to build the wall has come. And he says work is starting today, Monday the 23rd, and in fact adding his voice to what the spokesman for the Minister of Interior said is Issa Timami, he's the governor for Lamu County, who confirms that the construction work will start indeed today, and it's expected to be completed before the end of the year. But when you look at the pace at which they will be working, according to Mwenda Njoka, there is a possibility of building a wall covering about 700 kilometers. That is what he characterizes as the first phase of the construction, to be followed by another possibly 900 kilometers at a later stage.
Does the government really have the money to construct this kind of wall?
The government may have prepared itself for this, although we seem to have been taken unawares of the plan. But, you know, once the government speaks about such a project, it means things have come to a point where they have just to do it because of the security concerns, given that Kenya's border, which starts from Mandera in the north and goes down to Kiunga National Park, there has been a lot of movement, people crossing, especially from Mandera area, which is closer to Somalia than other parts of Kenya, into the country.
And what have ordinary Kenyans been saying about this whole idea of constructing this wall? I mean, have they welcomed the idea, or they think barriers shouldn't be created at this time when there's matters of regional integration and all that?
In fact, even before the issue of constructing the wall had come to be put open to Kenyans, people were just suggesting, be it in the newspapers or, you know, in the public places, why can't they just follow suit? And many, many people for a very long time, plus commentators, have been saying that, well, this is the right time to go like, you know, Israeli wall that separates the country's border from Palestine's West Bank. And then others have been even equating that to, or rather reminding us of Cyprus, you know, that green line, they've been talking about that, which divides the Turkish north from the Greek south.
James Shimayula in Nairobi speaking to Isaac Mugabe. And now it's time for another segment of Learning by Ear, Crossroads Generation.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Crossroads Generation.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation, our future stands today.
We are coming to the end of this third season of our radio series. You're about to hear the 23rd of 26 episodes. Previously, we heard how the journalism students Mercy and Tina were devastated when their friend Trudy was killed. But they immediately took action and talked to their university professor.
So, how is the university radio going? Have you prepared the program we discussed before?
Tina and I have just finalized the script, sir.
I see. Tina, I would advise you to use a different name when you're on air, especially since you're the main source, for your own safety.
What are they planning? We'll soon find out. In an earlier episode, we heard that 19-year-old Dan had developed a business idea that was going pretty well. His handmade bags for ladies are proving very popular.
Are you serious? You mean these cute little handbags are made from plastic bags? From waste?
Yes, but of course, they are all clean now.
Well, Dan, I am Mrs. Jumbe. I would very much like to discuss business with you. Here's my card.
What a coincidence! Mrs. Jumbe is Nikki's mother, and Nikki and Dan were at high school together. They were both in love with Mercy back then. Mercy chose Dan, slept with him, and got pregnant. But Dan left when baby Linda was born 3 years ago. When he came back recently, Mercy refused to speak to him. She's in a relationship with Nikki now, and he recently asked her a very important question. Let's get started on today's episode, which is called The Answer.
Thanks for taking me away, Nikki. I just couldn't stay at Trudy's funeral any longer.
It's okay, Mercy.
Nikki.
Yes?
Do you love me?
You know I do. More than anything.
Then, yes.
Pardon?
You asked me to marry you. My answer is yes.
Wow. That's... Mercy, that's great. But... You're very vulnerable right now. I hope...
I know what I'm doing, Nikki. Unless you don't want to anymore.
Of course I want to. I've even asked at the registry office what we need to do.
What? Without asking me?
Well, I just wanted to know. In case you said yes.
Okay. So, what do we have to do?
There's some administrative stuff. Like proving that we're actually old enough to get married. And they advised us to attend premarital counseling.
Huh? What's that?
There are counselors who prepare couples for marriage. Tell them what it's all about, what the challenges can be, and how to deal with them. I know it sounds a bit silly, but...
I don't think it's silly. I want to do this right, Nikki.
Me too, Mercy. So, should we go there tomorrow?
Actually, there's something I need to do for Trudy first.
What?
I can't talk about it now, but you'll find out tomorrow.
Oh, Dan, it's you. Come in. I was just about to leave when you called.
Thank you, Mrs. Jumbe.
Don't be shy. Come on in. Nikki's not home. He and his father have gone to a funeral. Have a seat. So tell me, why did you want to see me so urgently?
Well, it's about what you mentioned the other day, when you gave me your card. I want to start a waste disposal business.
Waste disposal? What's that got to do with me?
You see, the bags I sold you are made from recycled plastic bags. So in a way, they are already part of my waste management plan.
I still don't understand.
Well, I live in the slums, right next to a garbage dump, and I think we could do better in the way we dispose of our rubbish. My plan is to recycle as much domestic waste as possible and show people what can be made out of it.
Interesting.
I thought we could be partners, Mrs. Jumbe. I thought that's what you meant when you gave me your card.
I gave you my card because I liked your bags, and I have a group of women who would be very interested in them.
I see.
Wait. Listen, Dan. I'll make you a deal. I'm a businesswoman myself, and my company has this silly new policy where the people in management are supposed to pass on the wisdom to the younger generation. So I think we actually both have something to gain here. I know that those bags of yours could sell very well, and so could the idea behind them. Now, if I invest a small sum, it would be in the business that already exists, the handbags.
But, Mrs. Jumbe...
Let me finish. If you fail, a small sum wouldn't be too hard to pay back. If you succeed, show me that you can make profit out of it, then we can discuss the bigger business.
Of course, Mrs. Jumbe. That's wonderful. I promise I won't let you down.
Of course, you would have to pay me back my money either way.
Naturally.
With interest.
Shouldn't we fix this somehow? Or put it in writing, I mean?
I see you're a natural. Never trust what you don't have written down. Come to my office tomorrow and we'll draw up a contract, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Jumbe.
Are you right, Jumbe, darling?
I'm just tired after the funeral. I think I'll go and lie down upstairs.
You do that, Dad.
Please help your mother clear the table, Nikki.
No problem.
Your father told me he saw you with that girl again. Nikki, where did you two go off to in the middle of the funeral?
Nowhere.
I'm not stopping you from having your fun with her. You can have all the fun you want. But to be seen in public, holding hands, and...
Is that what you think this is all about, Mama? Fun?
If you think I'm just going to stand by and watch you ruin your future, Nikki, you are very much mistaken.
Mercy and I are going to get married, Mama. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. I think it's time that you got that into your head.
Oh, I don't think so.
Hello there, and welcome to 101 University FM, our brand new university radio. I'm Masie Musoto, and I have the honor to present this, our first edition, which looks at a very sensitive topic. Today we're going to be talking about prostitution. I'll be speaking to a young woman who has seen it all and who's going to share her story with us. And we'll also reveal who's pulling the strings behind the business. With me in the studio is Tasha. That's not her real name, but she prefers to use this one in public. Tasha has to take care of her siblings because they lost their parents some years ago. Welcome to the show, Tasha.
Thank you.
So, to earn a living and pay for your tuition, you got a job. Tell us about it.
I used to be a call girl, a prostitute.
A lot of people would not talk about this profession in public. What made you want to talk about it on radio?
I lost a friend because she found out how this business is run here in this city. Her name was Trudy.
I think a lot of our listeners will know that Trudy died here at the university. People believe she was killed as part of a robbery that went wrong, but I think you have evidence that this wasn't the case.
Yes. Before she died, Trudy was compiling a report about the brothel where I used to work. At first, I refused to help her because I feared for my job, and I fear the man who runs it, because he's very powerful. He's a senior politician in this area. His name is Moses Mkaraba. And I'm here today to talk about this because I realize that sometimes bad things happen because we are afraid to speak out.
That's certainly true. And this is why we're dedicating this show to our friend and fellow student Trudy, who did want to speak out but was tragically prevented from doing so. Ah, wait! Breaking news coming in. I've just been informed that Mr. Mukaraba has been arrested for running an illegal brothel thanks to evidence that was handed over to the police anonymously. We're going to take a short break here, and then we'll be back with more background on the story. Thanks for staying with us at 101 University FM.
And we thank you, too, for staying with us for this episode of Crossroads Generation. The next episode is coming up soon. And if you want to listen to this one or to previous ones again, visit dw.de/LBE. You can also follow us on Facebook. Bye for now.
And now a reminder of the main stories we have been reporting. West Africa marks 1 year since the first case of Ebola was officially diagnosed. The virus has killed more than 10,000 people so far. The Kenyan government announces plans to build a wall along its border with Somalia as one way of tackling attacks by extremist groups. We welcome your comment on this program, either via an SMS to country code 491609575950. That's 491609575950. An email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. This is Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany.